I suspect that most of you are more familiar with the term transgender than with the term cisgender. How many of you had never heard that term maybe before I mentioned it last week? Okay. It's in your order of service if you're not sure how to spell it. The term transgender came first from the Latin, came from adding the Latin prefix trans, meaning across from or on the other side from, to the word gender, to indicate a person whose gender identity or gender expression does not match their biological sex. The term cisgender was coined as a complementary term by adding that Latin prefix cis, C-I-S, meaning on this side of. On this side of, indicating a person whose gender identity or gender expression for the most part matches the sex that they were assigned at birth. Speaking for myself, owning that label cisgender helps me to resist the all too common perception that transgender folk are the only ones who are deviant from some alleged norm, instead of seeing both cisgender and transgender as two among many legitimate points on a very wide spectrum that spans the diverse human condition, as Laura said, of human beings. Along these lines, regarding the limitations of even that growing acronym, LGBTAQI, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, ally, asexual, intersex. It depends on who you talk to about what all those stand for. Regarding that, a freshman at Columbia University was recently quoted in a New York Times article saying, you know, here at Columbia, we have our lesbians, our gays, our bisexuals, our transsexuals, our queers, our homosexuals, our asexuals, our pansexuals, our omnisexuals, our trisexuals, our agenders, our bigenders, our third genders, our transgenders, our transvestites, our intersexuals, our two-spirits, our hijras, our polyamorous, our undecided, our questioning, our others, and our humans. And as part of coming to see all those labels as various places along where we human beings find ourselves in all our gender and sexual diversity, I invite you to take a look at that insert to your order of service that's labeled the genderbread person. The genderbread person is a chart that's a playful attempt that was used in a recent UU transgender inclusion webinar to try to visualize how various spectrums interrelate regarding gender identity, gender expression, biological sex, and sexual attraction. Notice first that each of these four different attributes are each on a different and non-intersecting spectrum. So they can manifest themselves in different ways in different people. So any one individual can be anywhere on any of these four spectrums. And that creates that whole litany of categories that we were listing earlier. So gender identity, you'll see, if you look at the head of the genderbread person, gender identity is in your mind. Inside your head, do you think of yourself more as a man or as a woman? Gender expression is external. That's that dotted line. It's how you appear externally. Sometimes it's known as gender presentation. How do you present yourself to the world? In your clothes, in your behavior, in your appearance, do you present more as masculine or feminine? More androgynous or more gender neutral? The third category, attraction, you'll see is in your heart. One's in your mind, one's external, the third is in your heart. In your heart, are you attracted more to men, to males, to masculinity? Are you attracted more to women, females, or femininity? Are you attracted to both or to neither? Finally, there's a spectrum as well regarding biological sex. As mentioned earlier, transgender individuals identify as male or female in a way that differs from what is assigned to them by biological science. And intersexuals have chromosomal genotypes and sexual phenotypes other than simple XY male or XX female. According to the Intersex Society of North America, if you ask experts at medical centers how often a child is born so noticeably atypical in terms of genitalia that a specialist in sex differentiation is called in, the numbers about somewhere between 1 in 1,500 births or 1 in 2,000 births, somewhere in there. But a lot more people than that are born with subtler forms of sexual anatomy variations, some of which won't show up until later in life. I'll provide a link in the sermon manuscript to further statistics if you'd like to see them. As a more concrete example of why all of this matters deeply, some of you may recall at this past summer's UU General Assembly, which was in Louisville this year, a decision was made to be more welcoming to transgender and gender nonconforming people by having many of the multi-stall bathrooms in the Louisville Convention Center designated gender neutral. And in the orientation email sent out in advance to all General Assembly participants, perhaps the most important part, or the part that most stood out to me, was the note that in all restrooms, we ask that you trust that each individual knows which restroom is most comfortable and appropriate for them. And having used quite a few of those gender-neutral restrooms over the course of a week, and it's almost inevitable, while in Louisville, I assure you that gender-neutral bathrooms are pretty much just bathrooms. In contrast, as the signs posted in those gender-neutral bathrooms highlighted, gender-specific bathrooms, which are ubiquitous in our society, can be incredibly dangerous spaces for transgender and for gender nonconforming people. The use of public restrooms can come with emotional and physical harassment, deep discomfort, risk of arrest for being in the wrong bathroom, even physical violence and death. The important noticing here is that more is needed than simply an increase of openness on the individual level, although that is a vital starting point. Changes are needed in how we structure our society. Relatedly, some of you may recall that even as we have celebrated breathtaking victories for social justice this past year in Maryland, the Maryland Offshore Wind Energy Act of 2013, the Firearms Safety Act of 2013, the death penalty repeal, substitution of life without the possibility of parole, as well as victories for the DREAM Act on immigration and same-sex marriage, even as we rightly celebrate those vital and important victories, it's important to remember that even with all that passing, the Fairness for All Marylanders Act of 2013 lost by a 5-6 vote, stalling it in committee. That bill would have ensured, quote, basic rights to transgender Marylanders, including the right to be free from discrimination in their jobs, homes, credit, and places of public accommodations. As you use, our first principle is about the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and to me, a natural outflowing of that commitment should lead us to partner with organizations such as the Maryland Coalition for Trans Equality, which is working to help that bill pass in the upcoming 2014 General Session. Members of this congregation did help with that work this past year, but further advocacy is needed to get that bill out of committee and passed. I should also note that this past Friday, October 11th, was National Coming Out Day, which celebrates our LGBTQIA friends, family members, and neighbors who have braved fears of discrimination, rejection, hatred, and violence to lead open lives of authenticity. In that spirit, I'm grateful to Laura Cromwell, a member of our congregation and my closest neighbor in this congregation, for her willingness to speak with us this morning. She's graciously agreed to share some about her growing gender awareness over time, her process of coming out, where she is today, and some suggestions for those of us who are cisgender about how we can be better allies to our friends, our family members, our coworkers, and our fellow citizens who are transgender. Welcome, Laura.
Good morning. I'm Laura Cornwell, and I am transgendered. I'm also considered a transsexual. I've gone through quite a journey in my life. I'm just going to share a little bit with you about how I figured out what was going on in my mind. At the age of 5, I was actually dressing in my sister's clothes, wanting to be female and doing everything I could to live that way in my mind. I was discovered by my mother and my sister dressed one day, and It was basically covered up and not discussed any further. I felt shame and embarrassment. It really was a bothersome thing to me that I couldn't share with my family what was inside of my heart. It's beautiful this day that people are able to come out at a younger age, but still it's a struggle for all of us. I remember moving down to Paoli, Indiana from Indianapolis. I had long hair and I was really happy with it. The Beatles were really big then, so I could get away with it. My father had this habit of telling my friends that your hair is too long and you need a haircut. Well, he took me into a barber shop and had all of my hair cut off the day I was going to a brand new school. And I remember putting my hood up over my head on a hot September day because I didn't want people to see what had happened to me. As I proceeded into school, I had been making straight A's and no problems. Suddenly, I started to have a real drop in my grades. I started acting out in class. My mom, who had great faith in the medical community, took me to various doctors to try and figure out what was wrong with me. And people would ask me, my teachers, what's going on? And there was no way that I could really explain to them what was in my heart because I really didn't know how to do that at that young age. I was hiding my desire to be female, so the medical doctors really couldn't make a medical diagnosis, a proper one. I don't know if they even could have at that time because it was such a hidden thing. Many of us that are transsexuals go to a lot of different doctors. We have mental issues which we try and hide. We have to deal with discouragement from our family members. And even today, there are a lot of mental health professionals who are not even ready to admit that there is such a thing as transgender. I have a friend who was the best man at a wedding when I was the other gender. And I called him because he is an expert in therapy. He works at DePaul University in Illinois. He's a professor now. And when I told him that I was considering transition, he told me that it's a farce, that it's not real, that the doctors who are involved in it are merely using us as an income source, and that I shouldn't do it. I can't tell you how difficult that was for me to process. I thought John was a close friend. That's the kind of stuff that we have to deal with on a daily basis if you're a transsexual or transgendered. My sister, who was supportive of me as I started to come out and as I was transitioning, told me one day that she wished I had told everybody in the family at an earlier age what was going on with me. I really was happy because I felt like she was understanding. And then she said, maybe they could have cured you of your problems if the doctors knew when you were younger. They could have made you happy to live in your birth gender. People don't get it. I remember hearing a recording of my voice at 8. I was shocked by my unconscious vocal femininity. It took me time to realize what was going on in my own mind. At 12, I began drawing self-portraits of my body and face as a female, with breasts, with makeup, long hair, female clothing. A close family friend tells me privately that I am just like a girl. It is a compliment that has incredible power over my heart and my psyche. Finally, someone has seen through the wall I have built around my carefully hidden inner being and what they see within has given them pleasure. Finally, my femininity is not only acknowledged in a fantastical light, it gives me immense power as a child. Finally, I am flooded with a heady emotional tidal wave and actually admit to this person that I too really feel like a girl. We talk about Christine Jorgensen. We talk about different people that are coming out. In time, I say out loud, I want a sex change operation. My then partner and our secretly shared, emotionally explosive social anarchy encourages me. It will happen one day. You will have your dream. I am happier and more alive at that moment than I have ever been before in my short young life. I have no idea how this admission as a child will affect me for the rest of my life. I started going through denial not too long after that. At 14 and on through to 16, I continued to secretly dress, to dream, to make love with my initial partner, an adult, adding more and more people, also adults, to my list of lovers. I have a puppy love girlfriend, Laura. My first kiss, my first hand held before that. I leave her for a much more aware female. Laura leaves me her name. My world is carefully divided, the open world and the closed world. At 16, I am expanding my horizons into Louisville with an adult lesbian. I am introduced to a gay couple, both open. After a few liaisons back and forth, they have news for me. I was thinking I might be gay at this point. I mean, the whole world seemed to be. They confirm that rather, I am a transsexual. And if I ever have sex reassignment surgery, they feel I might be a lesbian. Trouble erupts not long after. Missing drugs, a pistol shown to my mother. My family, in anxious concern, pushes me about my private excursions, and I become silent again. Until the age of 30, my life continues in drama to the extreme. Finding sobriety at 30, I come amazingly close to coming out as a transsexual. As the two gay men I met in Louisville had suggested, I was deeply into a passionate affair with an out lesbian in recovery as well. We are in a crazed spiral of sensuality and DS adventure. We are so responsible and so into the steps and life and love. And then I'm frightened again. I'm double living again. One side in a strongly conservative religious community, the other in the spiritual fight of a lifetime to remain clean, oil and water. My child from my horrendous first marriage is in a horrid situation with my first spouse. I have no choice but to rescue him. I abandon my lesbian lover, fight for custody of my child, and win. I abandon my transitional dream. I end up remarried, a powerful Christian partner, the house, the job, the blended family, involved in a Christian church. Yet, I am more troubled than I have ever been before. This continues on and on for 20 years until acceptance. I'm 50 now. My partner has fought her final battle with breast cancer. I sell our properties, win a pension with the state, and grieve terribly for my loss of her. Lonely in anguish, the one person who stood with me, gone, I decide to look at the other side of me that I had never been able to fully explore out of fear and guilt. I take a leap of faith, strength through honesty is my only hope left. My gender exploration leads me into an inner personal discovery that has now released me into a life where I once, long ago, found similar joy. As the youngster at 12, I looked at the world with awe and happiness. when I felt an honest affinity with an inner side of me that was so deeply hidden and protected because of my ignorance and lack of personal strength, controlled by the embarrassment I experienced as a young child, I became what I thought others wanted to see. I lost all hope in a dream carried deep within me my whole life that I never felt would happen. My anger and frustration nearly destroyed me from becoming the beautiful person I feel I am today. My only consternation is that I will not get to live nearly as long as I wish I could have in the gender of my true and honest self. Now I find hope. I stand before you today a new person, new because of surviving the rebirth of a personal discovery that I denied. By learning acceptance, I have finally found hope. My dream for all of us is to now find it within our hearts to accept what not only fits into our hopes for conformity and uniformity, to sacrifice our visions of a homogeneous environment that is simple yet destroys the diversity and complexity that human beings, that actually all living things, thrive in. The inherent worth and dignity of us all depends on our abilities to accept. The other side of this is the end of freedom, the worship of hate, the end of our dreams. Join me in our congregation's worship of hope. The person I dated when my spiritual search for sobriety brought me so close to personal acceptance and transition is a co-pastor of our sister church in Annapolis. How very ironic, how very real, that two individuals end up in the same home of hope. I remain perpetually grateful to her, to my family, Bill and Chloe, our church, our allegiances to the path of light. May we all be truly blessed.